Welcome to the X-Men Test Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are on the fourth episode of Season 5, the 68th episode overall, Bloodlines.
Surprise, surprise. It's another very good episode in Season 5.
I agree. It's kind of stunning that we haven't hit the bad episodes yet. The animation is still good in this episode.
It's funny how Season 5 is so famous for, like, going downhill, and we're, like, bracing ourselves for it, and there's, like, not that many episodes left, so
no.
We still get a lot of good ones here.
Yeah, there's, like, 10 or 11 to go. Or no, maybe, like, 9. 9 to go.
Yeah.
This episode, maybe even less, I'm not even sure, because we actually had to skip a few episodes that we've covered in previous seasons.
Right,
that
were aired, they were out of order.
Right, they were aired in Season 5 originally, but continuity-wise, they came in Season 3.
Right, there was the Cyclops backstory one.
Right, and the one that was like the post-Jean Grey dies one at the end of the original Phoenix Saga. And then there's another one in there too, Longshot episode.
Right, yeah.
So, if you're, you know, if you have a bunch of X-Men episodes downloaded on your computer or something, you might be surprised that we skipped a few, but we have covered them. Anyway, this one, like you said, very good. I would borderline say excellent. I have very little memory of seeing this one originally. I know I did, because there's one scene particular that stood out, but it was like for me seeing a whole new episode, and that was exciting for me.
This episode has like some religious content to it, and I was wondering if, like, in syndication later it wasn't aired as much because of that. Like, it's good, like, it fits the themes of the episode, and it's like definitely appropriate subject matter in the context of the story, but it's like kind of not politically correct to...
Well, I wouldn't say it's not politically correct. I would say it's just a little... The themes are a bit mature for a children's show.
Uh-huh.
But I think in the best way. I think kids need to be learning about this stuff. More than religion, it dives deep into political hate groups.
Yeah.
That are oppressing minority groups in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, you will hardly ever see that on a children's action television show.
Mm-hmm.
It's this heady stuff, and very well earned, in the sense of the X-Men have, like, built up this universe. Mm-hmm. And they can go to these places.
Right, yeah. And high stakes and realistic.
And satisfying to see the X-Men fight these guys.
Yeah.
So, essentially in this episode, you're going to see the Friends of Humanity. You're going to see, you know, our favorite hate group. Not favorite, but you know what I mean.
Our favorite group to hate.
Our favorite group to hate, right. You're going to see Nightcrawler. You're going to see Mystique. You're even going to see Sabretooth. You're going to get some cameos in here, some pretty satisfying ones. And
all right, let's get the ball rolling. Let's start from the top.
Right, so this it starts with a news broadcast, as many good X-Men episodes do start, showing, like, the world at large, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And here they paint that things are still not good for mutants. You know, things might be good for the X-Men. They live in a nice, comfy mansion, and they've made a lot of progress in their own lives and saved the world 100 times. But still, in the world at large, things are going badly. Like, there's a brief image of a mutant trying to attend a college or something, or a high school, and she's just getting showered with verbal and maybe even physical abuse as she's being escorted in by police or the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, the way it was framed was almost exactly like those famous images from the 1950s when they
tried to integrate the schools down south.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, that was a nice historical touch. I mean, you can ask, like, is it appropriate to appropriate that those images from history for a children's cartoon show?
Mm-hmm.
I think yes, especially when the message aligns on the side of justice, social justice anyway, in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good lesson to teach kids. You know, it's like, it's one of, I mean, kids notice this stuff. If you're a smart little kid who pays attention in class, you'll learn about the real events in history, and then you watch X-Men, you see this, and like, oh yeah, you know, you make the connection. It's not, it doesn't go over a child's head. And it shouldn't go over your heads now if you're all our age in your early and mid-30s. So that was an interesting, like, opening. And then there's just discussion. So, like, at the world at large, there's still a lot of anti-mutant bigotry going on. They show another testimony in Congress where Graydon Creed is called out of the woods, I guess, to testify.
They say brought out of seclusion, right? Whatever that means.
Well, I mean, we have a hint of what that means. So when we last saw him, you know, Graydon Creed's the leader of the Friends of Humanity, this mutant hate group. And when we last saw him, Wolverine has to rescue Jubilee or something, and he defeats him. Wolverine knows that Graydon Creed is the son of Sabretooth. So he gets a hologram machine from Professor X's basement, mm-hmm. and he brings it to the Friends of Humanity base and plays it for Graydon Creed. He shows, like, a video file of Sabretooth that Professor X is narrating, and it says, known children, Graydon Creed.
Yeah.
And Graydon Creed loses his mind at this revelation. You know, like, he literally goes crazy.
Right.
And that, I guess that's what drives him into seclusion. Like, Wolverine defeats him mentally, mm-hmm. you know, which is a taste of his... You know, that's, like, the way you want to feed a guy like that, like, so filled with hate and bigotry, is to expose their hypocrisy in, like, such a personal way. Mm. Anyway, so I don't know why Graydon Creed is being asked to testify before Congress in the first place. Like, what's to hear from this guy? He is a known, like, hideous human being, you know.
Mm.
But whatever. You know, and then, like, at the testimony hearing, they do sort of... They slam him down in a way. They say, you're a bigot. You need to, like, stay in order here. And they're like, oh, we hold you in contempt. And he's like, the same can be said for me to you. He's a real slimy villain.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Friends of Humanity have evolved in one way since we last saw them. They now have this weird inner sanctum of evil assholes.
Yeah. Where they wear hoods over their heads so you can't see their faces.
Right.
I mean, they're blue hoods,
It's like 90% the KKK hood, you know? It's blue instead of white, and it's like weirdly, like, it's really weirdly draped into like a mini cape behind their heads.
It's like a cowl.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. They're like Batman cowls without the ears. And they're a bunch of assholes, and Creed is called before them because I guess now he's back from retirement or whatever, his trip in the insane asylum. And he's like, all right, I'm back to lead you guys. And like, they're like, what are you, crazy? You're the son of Sabretooth, and you know, you're despicable.
And that's not all. Look what else we dug out from your family tree. And they, like, hand him a paper to read.
They hand it to him. They throw it in his face.
Right. And he reads it, and his eyeballs bug out of his head a little bit, and he, like, almost goes insane again.
Right. So, should we say what it's... It doesn't reveal what it is yet, but...
No.
Okay, so... All right. Meanwhile, he's like, okay, well, I'll do whatever it takes to get back in your good graces. And they're like, okay, maybe you'll be useful to us. So then we cut to the next part. So it's Halloween in the X-Men universe, and we haven't seen Halloween celebrated yet. We've seen Christmas and maybe a few other holidays here and there. Maybe just Christmas. But anyway, it's Halloween. And at first, Wolverine seems to be in the spirit of Halloween. But then he's quickly very grumpy about it, as you'd expect him to be. So the doorbell rings, and some kids in some costumes. One's in a Spider-Man outfit, another's in a vintage Daredevil outfit.
Yeah.
And Wolverine scares them by wearing the Beast mask. And the kids run away.
Well, the kids say trick or treat, right. And Wolverine doesn't give them any candy. He goes, I choose trick, and he has the Beast, like... A mask that looks exactly like Beast's face,
right.
Which is funny because it has like the same hair
and a smile on it.
Yeah, whatever.
That's right, the hair.
Like, first of all, who made this mask of Beast's face, like in the exact likeness of him? I don't know. It's weird. It's weird that that exists.
Yeah, and those poor kids come like all the way up the grounds of the mansion for just a little bit of candy. Like, the X-Mansion is set deep back into the woods of Salem, New York, or Westchester, wherever it is supposed to be. And that's a long trek for some kids, and Wolverine he's not nice to them at all.
He just, like, scares them off or whatever, and then he's grumpy about it.
Well, at first he's happy about it. He's happy that they're scared. He seems to be in the spirit of Halloween, sort of. But then, you're right, and then he's grumpy.
Right, and Jubilee's there at the mansion, too, and she's like, I don't think Beast would appreciate you using his face to, like, scare children.
And then she's also like, you have to give the kids candy, too. Like, you know, you can't...
Which are, like, both fair points. Like, if I were Beast, I'd be upset.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not... You know, Beast goes out of his way not to be a scary monster. He's, like, a friendly giant, you know?
Well, but part of being a friendly giant is doing some friendly scaring, especially on Halloween. I think Beast would be okay with the mask.
Huh.
I'll disagree with you there.
Okay.
But Wolverine says some weird stuff. He says, like, I hate Halloween. This isn't weird. It's a legitimate point. It's like kids dress up as mutants and monsters, and they're all happy about it. But then the next day they get to take their costumes off.
What about the rest of us?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I could see that touching a point. But Wolverine looks like a normal human being for the most part. So right. He doesn't really get to complain on that level, in my opinion. Especially when he's mocking Beast, who actually has that problem. So you're right. There's something weird going on there. But beyond that, he raises a legitimate point. But then he says something weird. He's like, I'm not surprised the rest of the team took off tonight.
Right.
So
no, took the night off.
Right.
Right? So, which is to imply that he's doing hard work right now.
Right.
I don't know.
He's just lounging around in the mansion on Halloween.
Maybe what he means, though, is, like, him and Jubilee are, like keeping an eye on the mansion, you know, like, for security purposes.
He's in his casual clothing. He's not in his costume.
Uh-huh.
But
yet.
Yeah, but it's weird. Like, yeah, are you working right now? You're just
like, you could really just be watching TV.
It seems like everyone has a night off and you have nothing to do. You're just staying home answering the doorbell when kids are trick-or-treating.
He's guarding the mansion.
Okay. It turns out Rogue's there, too, but she comes in later. Anyway, so then the doorbell rings, and Jubilee answers, and she's actually startled. It's Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a funny reaction, because you're like, oh, why is she scared of him?
Yeah.
But then it turns out, and I was like, yeah, I don't know why. But then it turns out, I remember, like, she actually hasn't met Nightcrawler yet.
Right. Oh, yeah, because she wasn't on those, like, away missions in Europe where the rest of the team meets him.
Yeah. And I was happy that we got another, like, almost full-fledged Nightcrawler episode.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have very little memory of this. I know Nightcrawler has come back in various cameos in different episodes. But to see him in another, like, excellent episode as much as his origin episode is very satisfying to me. Because, like I've said before, he's a great, you know, X-Men character in the first place. But he's also a great animated cartoon character. I think of all the animated Marvel superheroes, Nightcrawler is like one of the best ones, and it's kind of just a shame that he wasn't on the regular roster. But so he shows up and he explains to Wolverine that his mother has been kidnapped, his real mother,
right?
Not his adopted parents, who are really nice to him. The Wagners are from a circus in Germany, a traveling circus. I guess they're like gypsies.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're very nice. He says, oh, no, they're fine.
Right.
But it's really...
that was a funny line, though. Wolverine's like, did you call your mother at the circus?
Yeah, just the way he delivers it. It's so Canadian. Did you call your mother at the circus? Like, I don't know. That's not exactly a Canadian accent, but just, there's something about the cadence of that delivery. It was very hilarious. And, yeah, he's like, no, they're fine. It's like, this is birth mother I've never met before. You got to help me. And
I don't know who she is. I don't know who these people are that are threatening her.
Right.
Like, I don't know what to do. I'm totally overwhelmed.
And there's a Wolverine's now in his costume, and there's a close-up on his face with all his, like, nose scrunched. He's like, whatever it is, we'll get to the bottom of it. He's, like, so serious about it. And then, you know, they sort of exit, and Jubilee is staying behind with Rogue. She's like, oh, you know, it dawned on me. I wonder if Nightcrawler's related to Beast.
Because they look alike.
Right.
Which, like, they don't, except they're both blue. But
well, they've got blue fur.
Yeah.
And Rogue's like, that's about as likely as me being related to Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Which is some heavy foreshadowing.
Yeah.
But, you know, just this is me nitpicking as an X-Men fan. Has not Beast explained to Jubilee that he's not naturally blue, that he did a science experiment on himself and grew the blue fur?
Right.
I mean, they've been together quite some time. Like, she was never curious to ask.
She doesn't know.
Maybe it's inappropriate for her to ask him, because she just assumes he's a mutant and, like, he just, you know, is that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think that probably would have come up. He would have explained to her his origin story in some episode we never saw.
Well.
Okay, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway... So, they hop on a Blackbird or one of the jets they have, and they're flying off to wherever they've been told to meet, you know, wherever Nightcrawler's mother's being held. And this is where Jubilee gets to know Nightcrawler a little bit. And she explains, like, I know you helped Wolverine in the past, like, emotionally. And I was wondering if you could do the same for me.
Basically, yeah.
And Jubilee goes into her backstory, which she doesn't really talk about much in the show, which is kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. She says, like, I'm an orphan too. Unlike you, though, I was never even really adopted. So I don't know my birth parents, and I never had, like, a real, like, stable adopted family.
Right. No one, like, really wanted to keep her forever. She would go from one house to another until they got tired of her, she says.
Right. And it's sad. Yeah. And she's like, so you got anything for me? He's like, and he's reading the Bible. He's like, well, I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
And so that's when he starts pro-stylizing at her.
Which, proselytizing?
Oh, yeah, proselytizing. I'm sorry. Can you pronounce it both ways?
Oh, really?
Maybe.
Oh.
I might just be stupid. either way, he starts sort of preaching at her. And, you know, I think it's a credit to the show that they allow this to exist for the Nightcrawler character in the show. You know, it is part of the comics. He's religious.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to have a Christian mutant. I think, like, it's true to his character. And I think, like, he's got a true Christian message. He's, like, it's all about helping people in need and praying for them, despite, you know, all their sins or faults, and, like, accepting them and loving. He has a very, like, love and brotherhood message.
Forgiveness.
Right. And, yeah. Like, to me, like, I'm not personally not Christian, but that is not offensive to me in the slightest. And I'm, like, fully in favor of that kind of message being propagated on my children's entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have no problem with that.
At the same time, if I were Jubilee in that moment, I'd be kind of weirded out, because he is talking about how, like, even when, like, friends and family let you down, you right. still have the God. Love of God,
yeah.
and, well, like, God's love is everything, and, like, that kind of thing. Like, if I were Jubilee, I'd be like,
yeah, but, right. I mean, people, I mean, there's a reason why religion resonates with 90% of the world's populace.
Yeah.
It's because people need something a lot of times to fill the spiritual sides of themselves.
Right, sure.
I mean, like, I wouldn't describe myself as an atheist. I've got my own weird, like, sense of spirituality. I'm not going to go into that too much. It's nothing strange, but it's just, like, everyone, like, has to feel, I think, that side of themselves somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be with God. It could be with, like, a passion or, you know, just a sense of, like, connection to something, you know,
yeah.
something outside yourself. So, you know, it's like, Jubilee is, like, had a messed up life, too. She's an orphan who's, like, adapted by this paramilitary force.
Right.
And has, like, risked her life many times, and she's sad and doesn't have parents. And she's only 14 or 15 in the show. So
right.
it's like, I don't think, you know, like, if I was Nightcrawler, I would tell her, yeah, like, you know, like, God might give you some comfort and some
yeah.
relief. So it's like, it is just, like, bizarre, like, in the sense that in a cartoon show that a character would take to that message. Because it doesn't, you know, the way they present it, it's like Jubilee doesn't seem to have a religion.
Right.
Okay. So they arrive at this base. They realize it's the Friends of Humanity's. It's a new headquarters they have. It's even more elaborate than their base they've been to before. And they're surprised how much wealth and power they've accumulated,
mm-hmm.
which is a subtle, interesting commentary, you know, like socio-political commentary about, like, the secret power of these hate groups, potentially, you know,
mm.
they have a lot more support than you think sometimes. And Wolverine gives, like, one of the worst lines he's ever given on the show. He pops his claws and he's like, "Let's go visiting."
Yeah.
It's so dumb. That was a misfire, but he does have many other good lines this episode. If we can remember them, we'll say, but, like, still, that one, like, stood out as.
But he's in classic, like, side character mode here. Even though he has, like, a lot of lines and a lot of screen time, like, the story is not centered around him in this episode.
Right.
And he has, like, a lot of chances for those one-liners.
Yeah. We see some interesting. I like the animation in this episode. There's one. They break into this base. They split off into two teams: Jubilee and Wolverine, Rogue and Nightcrawler. And there's one scene of Wolverine, he's breaking into the base, and he opens a door. And normally, how does Wolverine open a door?
He, like, slashes through it.
Right, yeah. And usually the door will just, like, slash into pieces, or it'll, like, almost explode out.
Yeah.
But this time, he shoves his claws through the
It's like a double door, like an elevator
right.
type of door situation, even though it's just to another room.
It's like the concrete slabs.
And he wedges his claws into the crack that separates the two doors in the middle and uses the claws to, like, pry the doors to open.
And then they slam immediately behind when him and Jubilee get through.
Yeah, but the animation sequence that makes that happen, it's quick. It's like 3 seconds, but the animation is like really beautiful.
Yeah, it really stood out to us. We're like, wow, that's a cool way for him to enter. We haven't seen that yet. Really putting those claws to work. I mean, I guess, you know, it makes you, I guess the claws must be so sturdy in his wrists that if reverse pressure is put on them, like the way he does, where he like sort of crosses his arms and uses the claws as a, I guess, a lever.
Yeah.
I guess it wouldn't hurt him, right? It's not like they're going to bend
back. Adamantium doesn't bend or break.
Yeah, but his skin is, whatever. You're right. It's adamantium. it's covering his skeleton. So Rogue and Nightcrawler are wandering around. And they hear a voice say, "Kurt, is that you?" It's like, it's your mother. And at first you think for sure this has to be like a robot or a hologram or a projection, because it's so stupid. And we've seen that in the show many times where characters are fooled by like disembodied voices. That's like, oh, it's me, your friend. Come and save me.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's actually the character. Uh-huh. So we might have mentioned earlier, I don't even remember, Mystique is his mother.
Right.
And I appreciated this episode because in previous episodes, the show will hint at these convoluted comic book backstories. Like the fact that Nightcrawler is the daughter, he's the son of Mystique. It might have even been hinted in another episode. There's been other stuff like that too, where Cable's been hinted to be the child of Jean and Scott.
Yeah.
And they'll show like a flash for a second, and you have to be a comic fan to really know, get the reference. But like, I feel like in season 5 they've been tying up a bunch of these loose ends with these stories. I can't quite remember the other example, but there was one we did recently where they just took like a backstory plot line. It might have been just been like Magneto with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, you know, as an idea. It's like they may have like hinted at it before, but then they just like really showed it, you know.
Yeah.
So in this case it's like, wow, we're getting like the full story of like the whole Mystique, like Mystique's backstory, Nightcrawler's backstory, right?
Yeah.
And we dive deep into later, we'll see Sabretooth's backstory some more. Nightcrawler is the son of Mystique, which I remember when I learned it as a kid, I forgot how. It was either through the comics or just like a trading card or something. I was sort of surprised at it, but it does make sense. They're both blue people. And then we learn that later in the episode, we learn that Nightcrawler reveals himself to be 25 years old, which, all right, so let's use the real time of the show. This show probably came out in 1996, I think the last season aired, or maybe even 97. So what's 97 minus 25? Like early 70s?
71.
Right. 71. So I just thought it was weird because they show, Mystique said that like I've been many women in my life and she transforms into different characters she's been. So like some rich, some poor, but rich was always more preferable. And she's like, at one point I was married to an Austrian Duke.
Yeah.
And the way they show it, like the world of the Austrian Duke, to me it seems like way more old-timey than the early 1970s. And I know that's not the logic of the show.
I think it's just that it's formal, not that it's right. A long time ago.
I know. But like in my head though, when I think of Austrian Duke and Mystique, like Wolverine's like over 100 years old or something.
Yeah.
Like her aging is slowed down too. I just find that to me it's like Austrian Duke time for Mystique must have been in, to me it's like the 1920s or something, you know, the Franz Ferdinand days,
right?
But whatever, it's fine. It's all interesting to learn that Nightcrawler is the son of
an Austrian Duke.
Yeah, Austrian royalty.
Yeah.
But that comes a little bit later. Meanwhile, it was all a trap. Mystique also reveals that she had another son, Graydon Creed, which is surprising, and that was with an affair with Sabretooth. And so they're trapped in this room. Graydon Creed's up in like a control console, much like the Danger Room setup almost. Mm-hmm. And he presses a button to gas them. And, he's just like fuming at the mouth, like wanting to kill his whole family. Oh, and Rogue's stunned to learn that Nightcrawler is
her brother.
She's the adopted daughter of Mystique. So they're adopted siblings,
right?
Essentially. But the question that I don't know, and X-Men Test fans, tell me in the Facebook group if you know the answer to this. Nightcrawler's not the son of Sabretooth. He's not. No, they explain that in the show. Yeah, so they're half-brothers. Never mind. Actually, the show does answer that question.
Yeah.
Because the way Mystique presents it at first is, I had two children before I adopted you, Rogue,
right,
that were born of me. But okay, so in that moment, I thought, like, are they full brothers or half? There's no way Nightcrawler is the son of Sabretooth.
No.
Right. Okay.
He's so the son of an Austrian duke.
Right. Okay. So maybe that explains more why Green Creed's an asshole. I don't know. Whatever. The Austrian duke doesn't turn out to be any prize figure himself. You know. I'm just trying to wonder why Nightcrawler has more humanity.
Well, but that was a mystery. Also, is that Mystique says, like, oh well. Kurt, I had to give you up, and she, like, put him down river or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, she's actually about to throw him in the river.
Yeah.
And they keep cutting away from, like, what she actually does.
It's implied that she somehow puts him in the river and he washes downstream.
Oh, by the way, I remember in the Nightcrawler episode, I think they show Mystique as his mother in a flashback, but Nightcrawler doesn't know. So right. They did hint at it in the past. Right. Yeah.
But then she says, like, well, I was living this great life as the, like, an opulent... like Duke's wife,
right?
And then I gave birth to a mutant, so my secret was revealed. But that aren't mutants born to humans sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, they obviously.
Why is she revealed for having a mutant son?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, like, it makes more sense if they blamed the mother. It like, oh, I gave you a child, and this is how the child comes out. You know, you're cursed or something.
Yeah.
If it was like a superstitious thing. Or, like, just a plain-out bigoted thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Like, around the time Nightcrawler was born, a lot more mutants were being born.
Mm-hmm.
And they were being born to human parents, obviously. You know, you don't have to be a mutant to have...
A mutated child.
Right, and you could be two mutants and have a human child, as the case of Green and Creed.
Right.
Which is kind of an interesting, you know, thing in the X-Men universe.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, so I think that is, like, a question that is not really addressed in a satisfying way. It's like, why is Mystique blamed?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, maybe, you know, it's like, they show the birth and it's like, they can't, like, get too graphic. But if I was imagining it as a movie,
mm-hmm.
like, let's say she gives birth. And in a movie, you can show a birth, like, much more, like, sweaty and realistic, yeah. sort of. I mean, you don't have to have a full shot of, like, the birth canal. But, uh-huh. you know, you get, like, a more intense scene. Like, maybe when the baby comes out, she, like, panics. And in that moment, she turns into, like, the Blue Mystique.
Because
she can't control it, you know, kind of thing. And that's when they see the whole thing. Like, I would have made that, like, a touch.
Right.
And they could have animated that as well. But, like, it would, like, give it, like, a moment where she reveals herself at, like, she lets her guard down.
Right.
So, anyway, it's a good backstory. I mean, I like the backstory of Nightcrawler, and I like the backstory of Mystique. I think she's an interesting character. This is my favorite version of Mystique. Well, I mean, you know, outside the comics. Like, I like her in the cartoon better than the two iterations we saw in the movies.
Yeah.
I just think it's a cooler character.
It's much more fleshed out, and she's more interesting.
Her outfit's cooler.
She has more, more of a sympathetic side.
There's more, like, there's a more weird, like, rogue, not to use the word rogue, but a more run-and-gun story to Mystique. Like, she'll go with different villains, she'll be on her own at some times, doing, like, weird shit, you know, adapting Rogue in the first place and forming her own mutant team.
Right.
As we saw in the Rogue Origin episode. I hope that when they reboot the X-Men movies in the new universe, they have this version of Mystique that wears a white dress, first of all.
With the skulls. are really important.
They could tone the skulls down a little bit. It doesn't have to be, like, enormous... like skulls that she wears.
It doesn't even have to be like real skulls.
Right.
It could be like weird golden jewelry. Skulls or something. Yeah. But
okay. So, but like, I hope it's like Rogue is the adopted daughter of Mystique in, you know, from the, like they do that and they do the whole Ms. Marvel story.
Yeah.
I'm almost certain they're going to do that because they're going to do the Captain Marvel movie, right? That's coming up.
Yeah.
But I guarantee that before or after Captain Marvel 2, I bet there'll be a sequel. They're going to, by that point, they'll have control of the mutant characters. They'll incorporate Rogue into one of those movies, and Rogue will steal her powers in one of the Captain Marvels, and that'll be a huge, like, cliffhanger plot. I mean, if they don't do that, I think they're fucking crazy, because it's a super dramatic one.
Mm-hmm.
Rogue's an awesome character.
Yeah.
Like, it's a way to cross these worlds, and it's based on the fucking comics, and do it, and make Mystique, like, a major villain of Ms. Marvel as she was presented in the comics and stuff, you know? It's, like, a way to cross the Avengers world.
Yeah,
so
then you get, like, the adult version of Rogue with, like, all of her full-fledged powers, and then she can have all her awesome adventures afterwards.
Yes, like, joins the X-Men as a side. Like, it branches off into those movies. Like, I think there's so much potential for this crossover in ways that people aren't, like, fully realizing yet. It's going to be amazing. So that, I think they're going to go there. And if they don't, I think it'll be a huge mistake. Anyway, so they're being gassed. Nightcrawler teleports into the console room to fight with his brother. He's kind of like, he's trying to do the salvation thing where convince him, like, listen, I love you, we're all children of God. And Graydon just laughs in his face, yeah. you know, like, pretty heartily. He's like, you're a demon! And he's also getting beat up by Graydon Creed
yeah.
in a way that did not seem realistic to me. Nightcrawler is a great fighter.
Yeah. But he's trying to go easy on him. He's not trying to hurt him. It's his brother.
Right. Yeah, he's not
trying
violent.
To just, like, subdue him enough that they can talk.
Well, he does punch a guy. And we see a scene when they first break into the Friends of Humanity base. Nightcrawler punches a guy at the front door.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, who are these guys? Yes. Like, it was, like, right after he punched him. It's like, yeah, it's the Friends of Humanity. Uh-huh. And by the way, I wanted to mention that all the Friends of Humanity you see in this episode and every other episode, too, it's, like, the same three stock characters.
Yeah.
It's, like, a continuity of the same four guys. There's, like, you just know him if you see him. There's, like, a bald white guy with a goatee or a mustache.
Uh-huh.
There's, like, a more Hispanic guy with, like, a pencil mustache.
Uh-huh.
And there's, like, some other guy. And they're just, like, the same four goons. And they keep getting transferred to different Friends of Humanity bases.
They're really loyal supporters.
Yeah. So, anyway, Graydon Creed, surprisingly, is holding his own against Nightcrawler. And then what happens next? You know, they have to escape this base now. They're being shot at by the Friends of Humanity. Mystique, like, is running along, like, a waterway or something. It's like an aqueduct or something connected to the base. And Nightcrawler confronts her, and Mystique is
It's a dam. It's the top of the dam.
Oh, it's the dam, right.
Yeah.
So Mystique is pretty, like, you know, she's a villain.
Yeah.
And Wolverine has a classic line when Mystique runs off. And Nightcrawler's like, where'd she go?
Uh-huh.
What does he say? He says, Wolverine, in response to that, Wolverine's like, nothing more touching than a mother's love.
Yeah.
Like, ironically commenting on the situation.
Right.
And I thought that was, like, a really harsh line from him.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, I mean, it's more of a comment on Mystique being a villain than his opinions on mothers.
Right.
But still, there's something that was, like, poignantly psychological on Wolverine's part. Yeah. Anyway, so Nightcrawler confronts Mystique, and she's, like, in full villain mode. She doesn't, you know, want anything to do with him. She's like, I didn't want you!
Yeah.
It's almost, like, cackling about it. But, you know, he's like, she's like, what do you think of that? He's like, well, I think, like, I'm going to pray for my soul every day that I can forgive myself to have this anger I have against you. And also I'm going to pray for your salvation so that you'll find peace and resolution.
So that you can forgive yourself.
And she almost starts crying at hearing all this. Like, she can't believe how good her son is.
Yeah.
And what was I going to say? Oh, and then, like, so then, like, the Friends of Humanity, they're in these helicopters. They're shooting the X-Men on the ground. And they're also shooting Mystique and Nightcrawler. And Mystique sort of jumps in the way of the bullets. And she gets shot in the arm. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she protects Nightcrawler for a moment. And then the dam blows up. Rogue does something where she, you know, they're flying around. And she tricks the helicopters to shoot at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Graydon Creed kind of blows himself up. He shoots at the dam. Nightcrawler teleports away. Mystique, we don't see what happens to her.
She gets washed right. downstream with the dam water.
And at first I thought for sure they were going to kill Graydon Creed.
Because
he's blowing up his family. He's attacking his mother and his brother.
Right.
And it's like, okay, can we just it's season 5. Can we just kill his character? He actually deserves to die. He's a bigot of the highest order.
No.
He's, like, beyond redemption.
Can't kill anybody.
No, right. Yeah. But I thought, like, maybe they did for a second, because it's like, you know, the helicopter.
Or that he, like, mysteriously disappears and we never hear from him again.
And that's kind of,
like, synonymous with a character dying in this cartoon
right.
series, you know?
And there's a twist ending. I mean, Wolverine's like, we don't know where either Mystique or Graydon Creed went.
Yeah.
And we actually do see Mystique slink off in the distance, like, she's okay. Like,
right.
That's kind of, like, fitting with her character. She's just never going to be, she's never going to hang out. You know, and
yeah, right. Well, Creed has a line, like, earlier on somewhere where he just is like, you know, Mystique, like, she's not out to protect anybody except herself.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like,
oh, right. She thought, yeah.
So, like, she kind of does protect Nightcrawler for, like, a minute there, but then ultimately, like, she fits right in with that characterization where, like, she just is a survivor, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's a survivor. She has another weird line she says to Nightcrawler. She says, like, I've been rejected in the human and the mutant worlds because mutants don't trust shapeshifters either.
Right.
And I was like, really?
It's like, no, it's just you because you're not trustworthy.
Yeah. I mean, Morph is, like, is loved, yeah. You know, he's a shapeshifter.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, maybe there is, like, you know, they're hinting at some kind of weird subtext that's going on in the mutant world where shapeshifters aren't trusted. But, you know, yeah, she's not trustworthy. She has had a million bad allies. She's made a lot of bad choices in her life. But, you know, she's like, I almost don't blame her for being evil, just talking about Mystique as a character in general, because the shapeshifting power is like, one, it's immensely powerful in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. If you were to imagine it as a real character to have it. So I just think it would lend itself to crime so easily.
Yeah.
Like, you would just feel compelled, especially if you're an outcast and you can't tell anyone what you are.
Yeah.
You would just be compelled to, like, you'd say, fuck society, I'm just going to rob this bank or rob these people. It's so easy for me, you know? Like, yeah. Any crime, like, crime is infinitely easy if you're a shapeshifter. You can escape any prison. You know, it's hard to, like, no one would even believe that you are a shapeshifter in a way. You know what I mean? Like, so I just think that, like, you would end up going down a dark path.
You don't think that shapeshifting would be useful, like, to do good, like, random acts of good rather than evil?
I think like, it's just more tempting to do some questionable things, especially being a thief more than anything, just to accumulate. You'd, like, justify it to yourself. You'd say, like, listen, like, I'm, you know, I'm an outcast, and I've got this unique power. Like, if I'm gonna, like, be, like, never can be accepted, and if I kind of have to be on the run because, you know, if I was captured by the military or the government, that would be a big problem, too. You know, you'd fall into the wrong hands. It's like, if I have to kind of, like, live on the outskirts of society, I'm just gonna, like, do what it takes for me to survive. And so, and I don't care, like, I'm just gonna, like, steal some money and live. It's kind of, reminds me of that movie Jumper with Hayden Christensen and Samuel L. Jackson. Uh-huh. Like, he's got the power to teleport, and he thinks he's the only one. And he just basically uses it to enrich himself and to live like a, you know, like a millennial hipster, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just like, oh, I'm gonna go to a pub in London right now, and then later I'll just, like, hang out on a beach in Hawaii, and then I'll teleport back to my New York penthouse. You know what I mean? Like, and just, I live in the outskirts.
The penthouse that he, like, got from the spoils of stealing.
Yeah, he just teleported into a bank and stole all the money.
Yeah.
So, I think it's, like, it's analogous to that situation. Hmm. Anyway, so, Creed, though, is not dead. The KKK, Friends of Humanity guys, they have him tied up on an airplane with a parachute, and they're like, we have one last challenge for you. You failed, but you didn't even attempt to do the full mission, because his mission was to kill his whole family. I guess that's pretty hard. They never really outright said it in the show, but it's pretty harsh.
Like, well, he's the one that suggested it, actually, at
the
beginning.
Right, he is.
He's like, don't kill me. I'll, like, round up all of these, like, mutants that are giving you guys trouble.
Yeah, but they turn out to be his entire family. Mystique, yeah. Rogue, and Nightcrawler all essentially is his family. Yeah. He's like, I'll kill them all.
Right.
And then you'll trust me again. He's like, well, you left out one person, Sabretooth, and they kick him out of the airplane. Perfectly timed kick, because he parachutes right in front of Sabretooth's
shack.
It's almost
like they've done this before.
Yeah, his shack in Canada that I guess he lives in sometimes when he's not busy hassling Wolverine. And here is a rare sight of Sabretooth not in his costume.
Yeah, he looks weird without his costume.
He's in a black wife beater. I hate to use that phrase, but that's what it is. Yeah. You know, and blue jeans. And he's just like, oh, so you're my son, the mutant slayer.
Yeah.
And he's like pounding his fist together. He's like, I'll show you a thing or two.
Yeah.
And Green, he's like, no. And then the episode ends. He's going to just get, I don't know, what's Sabretooth going to do to him? Kill him? I mean, he's a cold-blooded murderer. Is he going to just kill his own son, or is he going to torture him? It's kind of open-ended. But I'm sure that's the last we see of Green and Creed in the series. Yeah. So I guess he's getting a fate he deserves. I mean, are we rewarding Sabretooth's, like, behavior in a weird way by saying, like, I don't know. You know, because Green and Creed is probably a worse villain than Sabretooth in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to say, because Wolverine thinks Sabretooth is, like, the lowest of the low of all people he's ever met.
Right.
He visibly, like, screams when at the mention of his name. Like, that's how bad they imply Sabretooth to be. So, who knows? They're both bad.
Yeah.
Both two rotten eggs. But anyway, like I said, weird to see Sabretooth out of costume, because remember we had that question about what his costume is. Right. Like, is it, like, is he wearing a brown body thong over...
So the answer is yes, right? Like, he is wearing a brown body thong. Like,
is it, though? Oh, no, not necessarily, because it could be a tan pants with a brown body thong.
Yeah.
Like, flesh-colored pants.
Yeah.
Or he's just wearing the brown body thong and his legs are bare. I think he's wearing like a full spandex outfit.
I think so too. Yeah, all right.
That's too crazy to imagine otherwise. But the question came up because it had something to do with like.
Well, because his.
He was animated with his hands, or he takes a glove off. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something bizarre going on. He removed an article of the clothing once.
I think it's just, like, confusing because, like, his whole outfit is flesh-colored, basically, so you can't tell.
Right, yeah. Right? Yeah.
But now we discover that he has, like, normal clothes and.
Yeah. He's got, like, a full head of blonde. He's, like, got a full blonde curly mullet.
Yeah.
Which is funny. You know, I mean, he doesn't look. He looks like he could maybe slightly pass for human. He kind of looks like how Beast looked like in human form.
Uh huh.
Remember, like
he could just be a bodybuilder
with like pointy teeth,
yeah,
and weird eyeballs.
Right.
I think his eyeballs are probably his biggest giveaway.
Well, he could get like contacts and like tooth caps if he really wanted to
get his teeth
like,
shaved down.
In,
right. Yeah. Know? Yeah, but he's probably not interested in that.
No, I'm sure he's not.
Yeah. So that's the end of the episode. I thought it was a wonderful episode. It's everything right about the X-Men cartoon, and it points to, I think, where Marvel should go in the future with the movies and stuff about, like, do the Rogue backstory, the Mystique backstory properly. Same thing with Nightcrawler. And why not throw Grayden Creed in the mix, too? Friends of Humanity would be a great plot point for the X-Men movies as well. We haven't seen that. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
So, I'm all on board with this episode. It's a great, great time. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I like backstories. I like Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Yeah, good themes. Heavy themes, but...
Yeah, like, heavy themes.
That, you know, makes it interesting.
I mean, you know, it's like we didn't really go too much into, like, the political side of it. It's like, but we know, hate groups are bad. Bigotry is bad. You know, they should all be arrested. Oh, Jubilee has a funny political line at the end. She says, oh, they're finally being arrested, the Friends of Humanity, after they mopped them up. But not for... being who they are, but because they blew up a dam.
Yeah.
And she's like annoyed about it.
Yeah.
And there's something, there's a big ring of truth to that
comment
of hers, you know, that's like very subtly, you know, that isn't that the way? It's like nailing, what's his name? Al Capone on tax evasion and not being a murderous gangster.
Right.
Kind of thing, you know?
So. Well, but there's the argument that like, the Friends of Humanity, like, are evil, but you need evidence in order to, like, put somebody away.
Right.
You know what
They're
I mean?
Exercising so, their free speech rights, despite how vile they are.
Right,
so it's like
exactly.
The
so
government
it's like,
can't outright prove that they're a terrorist organization.
No. But, like, would they... If someone had done, like, normal tax evasion, like Al Capone, right?
Yeah.
Would, for, like, any other citizen that, like... wasn't also a murderer, would
right.
they, like, be that, like, interested in putting them away for tax evasion? Like, maybe not.
We'll have
know?
To answer those questions like, on our Untouchables podcast, where we dive deep into Kevin Costner and Robert De Niro's performances as Al Capone and the guy who Kevin Costner was. I forget the guy's name in real life. Anyway, great episode. I'll do our plugs. Follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Facebook group. Rate and review us 5 stars on your podcast app. Any final words, Sonia?
No.
All right, we're going to have to start tallying up all the times you don't have any final words. Sometimes you do have some final words of wisdom, but this time, again, no final words. Good night, everybody.
Good night.